Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos. Hello and welcome to episode number 114 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. Firstly, as ever, thank you to our Patreon supporters. Without that support, this podcast definitely would not be able to happen. If you're a regular podcast listener, you'll know that most podcasts have adverts at the start, the middle, and at the end of each episode. The Ministry of Arts doesn't do that, and that was our choice. We decided from the offset to forego that monetary bonus in exchange for a better listening experience. The downside to that, of course, is that it's had to have been self-funded for 2.5 years. And although this content is free for everyone, if you enjoy what you hear and you want to keep it going, you can follow the Patreon link in the Ministry of Arts Instagram bio or go to www.patreon.com/Ministry of Arts. It starts from as little as £3 a month and 100% of it goes back into the podcast. But anyway, back to this week's episode, number 114, and it is, of course, Fiona Grady. I first became aware of Fiona's work when she appeared on the Art Proof podcast, which we talk about for the first few minutes of this episode. If you don't know of the Art Proof podcast, it has three hosts, Eric Thorpe, Nicholas Stavari, and Rowan Newton. And their current episode is with Delphine Diallo. Go over and have a listen. But after this one, mind you. But anyhow, Fiona Grady. Those guys wanted to speak to her for the same reasons that I want to speak to her. Her work's pretty amazing. She creates site-responsive drawings on walls, windows and floors using a sequence of dispersing geometric shapes. The artworks are a spiral system composed from repeating intervals that expand in proportion and direction. The use of repetition is a means to set in place an unconscious balance or understanding that can be interrupted by the introduction of a changeable factor. This challenges the viewer's reading of the drawing, asking them to consider its internal logic. Fiona's work is currently on view as part of the 2021 Kensington and Chelsea Art Week, which you'll be hearing more about over the next couple of months. Oh, and I should say thanks to Lisa Baker Limited for connecting me up with Fiona. So, that said, please come and join me over Zoom as I spoke to Fiona Grady.
I came across you through Art Proof because I was...
You was on right near the start of them, weren't
you? Yeah, I was one of the first ones. Yes, that was really cool. And I heard when you did your sort of Christmas episode with them and Delphian.
Yeah, it was good fun. That was a great episode with all four podcasts. And having three people opposite you, did you find that intimidating?
I mean, I felt quite relaxed because Nick Stavry, we'd known each other for quite a few years, and he'd actually, we met because he curated a project at a gallery and invited me to take part. So,
I figured you knew each other because it felt like that, you know.
Yeah, but what I liked about the ethos of their podcast was this thing of being, they said they wanted it to feel like we were sat in the pub having a chat. Exactly. So automatically, even though you're sort of in a slightly formal setting doing the conversation, it was fun, you know, quite relaxed. The only thing is like when you're talking to three other people, then it's always like hard to get a word in edgeways, isn't it?
Course.
It's like, who are we interviewing?
Listen, it's just as hard with me. I rabbit like them anyway. Yeah, see, that's the ones I like. I like it being a bit more laid back. I do have 7 questions that I ask each artist. Mm. And the first being, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
All right, sure. So I always start by saying I'm a site responsive artist. Yeah. And by that, what I mean is that I am normally invited to go to a space. It could be, I've done things in train stations, often it's kind of public spaces. I tend to work on windows as well, which is quite sort of crucial to my practice. So with that, I get given a window. I kind of design artwork that will fit into the window. And it's a bit sort of like stained glass where I'll apply coloured vinyl, which I cut into shapes. And then through the interaction with daylight, it then casts these beautiful coloured shadows into the space, which kind of elevate the rooms. And I try to pinpoint architectural details or characters of the venue as well, so that then it kind of allows people who are there to kind of look around them a bit more, consider their surroundings and kind of really elevate the importance of the situation for the artwork too.
Well, I know you know, as you've said there, you work on windows. Mm. It's geometric designs anyway.
Yeah.
But does it matter which side you view it from?
I really like the fact that it can be viewed from either side.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that potentially it kind of draws you into a building as well. But it's not funny because the building is situated will depend on how the light travels through it. So it ideally you have kind of south facing windows, so it captures lots of the light. But sometimes I've done things on windows in the ceiling, which has been great because then it casts shadows down the walls. Nice. Yeah, so I did one at Chapter Gallery in Cardiff in the art in the bar space, which is kind of like a big kind of open cafe bar area. And I made the work on the windows in the ceiling. But it was sort of funny because when I did it, it was overcast the whole time I did it, which in some ways was quite nice because I didn't have like direct sunlight the whole time. But at one point I'd gone out because it's part of Experimentica Art Festival, so I'd gone out to see some performance art, and then I got a message from someone saying, "Oh, the sun's come out! Like, quick, get back to the gallery." So, it's on, and so I did sort of see some glimmers of it, but then they, you know, very kindly organised a photographer to take some proper photos. Excellent. So I've got these amazing installation shots of it, but I never got to see the space kind of cast such dramatic shadows as through those photos.
So if it's a group show underneath or inside, you do sort of envelop other people's work as well, don't you, you know?
Yeah, it's
whether
kind of
they like it or not.
It's true. It's kind of a question of politeness, isn't it? Because if you're a sound artist, then you always have to kind of, you know, discuss how other people feel about sound in the space, whereas with mine, it's kind of like, I will fill the space that I'm given, so my work can be really big sometimes, and I'm always kind of conscious of wanting to not have other people feel that, you know, because if it's casting coloured shadows then it can affect the paintings, and some people's their work's very minimalist and sensitive, so it's kind of,
and it's sort of out of your control to some extent as well, isn't it, you know? And
exactly.
I suppose of a night, if there's lights inside the gallery, then that flips around and your work then gets projected outside to some extent, doesn't it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I did a solo exhibition at Brighton at the CCA, which is the University Gallery. And for that one, we had amazing direct sunlight throughout the day. It cast these huge shadows on the walls and the floors. But at nighttime, they lit it in the evening. So then people driving past would see it too. So that's kind of the ideal situation, that it has a sort of 24-hour lifespan.
Superb.
So
how did you start by putting vinyls onto a window, or onto at least onto glass?
Well, it was a gradual process. So when I did my MA at Wimbledon, in the last couple of months, I started making work, which was big wall drawings. And one of my tutors, Edwina, suggested that I do a wall drawing in a corridor where it had these windows that cast shadows. So I had these kind of interesting like square shapes in this mural. And then there was like these panes of light. And I took loads of photographs of that. And I was really excited by the image that it created. And then a couple of years later, I got invited to do an exhibition at the Bowery in Leeds, which is a small art gallery in Headingley, where it's kind of like a cafe gallery education space. And they asked if I wanted to do some vinyl on the windows. And I'd never worked with vinyl before, so it's quite cool to just try this new material.
Yeah,
and
new medium, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I used opaque vinyl, so it didn't actually cast coloured shadows. But it was kind of interesting because the idea was that they wanted to draw attention to the fact that there was the cafe downstairs, but upstairs was the education space and gallery.
Yeah.
So I had this like very graphic, like bright yellow and blue lines on the windows where, you know, like when you went past on the bus, you'd see it, you could see it, you know, across the street if you're driving past. So it kind of just was really an interesting process. And then another friend saw it and said, oh, did you know you can get transparent vinyl? So it kind of just went from there.
Yeah,
exactly. So it sort of started just, I mean, it's often the way with art. I mean, maybe you find the same thing, that people just kind of approach you with an idea, and I'm always game for trying something new.
Yeah,
so
why didn't I think of that? It's
exactly.
An obvious path that you hadn't seen.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like you just take the credit for it, but it's more of a collaborative thing than you think, isn't it?
So at the moment, I know that you do wall art, more nigh on or sort of mural type wall art. You do work on paper, prints, and the window work. They all blend themselves absolutely perfectly together, but they've all got a very different feel, haven't they?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, it's sort of, for me, it's the idea that leads rather than the medium. So I think where, you know, I'm excited about my practices, I feel like I have quite a strong footprint. So, you know, people kind of know what my work looks like. So I'd hope that if I did a print that you'd still be able to see the colour palette and the forms, and then sort of imagine that as a wall drawing or a window piece. And actually, I'm not really someone who just sort of sits in the studio and paints and draws all day long. I need like briefs to make art. But the way that I draw is I do screen printing. So I'll kind of like just book a session. I go to a print studio in Peckham called Sun Solars. And that's kind of nice because it's open access. So you can kind of just book a session and just come and print for a bit. So with that, I kind of like use it as a way to sort of draw and test out ideas. So I'll be like, oh, I've got a session in 2 weeks' time. I better like make some triangle stencil or something. And then I just kind of like mix up whatever colours and just go for it, really. But I quite like that printmaking is a way to think through ideas. So often when you see the window installations, if someone's kind of like given me, asked me to design something, I'll look back through the prints and see what I've done already and then kind of go from there, really. So they all kind of feed into each other and influence each other.
Yeah, they've got a slight different language, but they they all work well together. It's like when I see Camille Walala, she may do a large hotel in the Bahamas, but then she'll do a small print related to it on paper, and it still works in its own right.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's funny kind of like this thing of scale, because, you know, like with graphic images where it's kind of like a particular shapes and colours, the language is very simple and you can kind of just expand it onto different scales and it still kind of has the same, you know, kind of impact.
It's
sort of an interesting one to think through, isn't it? Because when I design my works, I do them on my computer. So they're kind of A4 size. And then you're imagining them on these spaces where sometimes the window's like 20 metres wide or something. So you kind of, it's a little bit of instinct and knowledge, but I'm sure maybe with Camille as well, that it's again, this thing of having a language that you already have in your work and then just using your experience. And every time you make something, it gives you ideas for what you might want to do next as well.
Yeah. And I suppose you've got to adjust your mindset slightly each time, whether it's a print or a wall or the large windows as well, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like when I do some collaborations sometimes with Haru, which is organised by Nishra East, and it's a washi tape. And it's really nice because it's a bit like a combination of the printmaking and the vinyl work, that it's this tape that's like a particular size, and then you cut it into pieces. But with the tape, it has, it's a little bit transparent, so you can still layer the colours up, but then the quality of the tape kind of takes hold of how and where the design goes. Yeah.
And with the vinyl, I've recently put some vinyl on some windows at home.
Oh, nice.
Totally different to what you've done. This was just for decoration. Mm. But I put some in when it was hot, and I put others in when it was cold. And the ones that when it was hot, they've not worked out. Does the heat affect you when you're working on the windows?
It can be a bit of a problem. I mean, once you've stuck it down, it should stay. But I've had a couple of installations where I've done it and I've had intense direct sunlight, and the vinyl does tend to stretch a little bit. So it just starts moving around and you're just sort of thinking, oh, please stick, please shrink. And normally once it's cooled down and then it's settled, it's fine. But I have, you know, I've been doing it for a few years now, so you kind of get used to what's going to happen. But it's a bit of it's touch and go sometimes.
Have you always had an interest in art?
Yeah, I have. I mean, it's a funny one because I was talking to my parents about it a while ago, and my dad or my mum had said, you know, like whenever I was came home from nursery, I'd always come home with piles of drawings. I remember just, you know, doing poster paint, you know, like how it would like dry and then crack off the paper. Yeah. But and then when my sister, who's a couple of years younger than me, went to nursery, she didn't come home with drawings, and my parents were like, this is really weird, like why is Fiona there all the time like painting, and then you know like Charlotte's just not done it at all. So I think maybe that was the first time my parents realized I was interested, and then because they knew that I was keen on it, they would, you know, make a point of taking us to art galleries. So you know, remember like going to Manchester Art Gallery and seeing like the Pre-Raphaelite paintings, and it's just sort of, it's always been something that I've loved. And you know, again, like I remember having conversations about whether I could be an artist when I was little, and it sort of, it sounds like, you know, it's one of these things people say, but it's always been the way.
So you enjoyed going around the galleries. Did your sister feel like she was getting dragged around the galleries, or did she like it as well?
I think she liked, I mean, she's kind of like quite open-minded. Yeah, so I still drag around galleries now, and you know, in the past I've roped her into being my assistant, but you know, we can have good conversations about art, which is all you really want, isn't it?
Do you know at what point you decided you wanted to be an artist?
Well, I remember having a conversation with my dad and him sort of saying, you know, Van Gogh died poor, and, you know, like art isn't really a career. But at the same time, my dad's a historian, so he's one to talk, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But it's, I think, when I went to, like in school, I'd always spend more time on my artwork, and my homework would always, I'd spend twice as much, you know, doing the art than anything else. Yeah. So it's never really been something that's been a question. It's more just believing that I could do it, if you know what I mean. So,
I've interviewed so many artists. You are far from the first to say that their parents sort of questioned whether it was a wise decision, but everyone's gone through and succeeded in what they've wanted to do.
I mean, I wouldn't say that they ever told me not to do it as well. It's just more, you know, kind of your parents just want you to be secure.
And secure as possible. Which piece that you've created has got the strongest emotional connection, do you think?
It's funny because I sort of like, although I use colour a lot and it is emotive, I'm more interested in the idea of like logic and order within it. Yeah. So it's a funny one because it's like, I don't think of it as emotional, but that's maybe because I'm not, I'm always looking for ways of kind of filling and creating things. So sort of like, I kind of think of it as more like as I'm making like a filling out a puzzle or something like that. It's kind of like I'm solving a problem and putting things together. But then that's kind of my process. But then I hope that when people go and see the work, then it kind of creates different feelings for them. So it's more about kind of like reflection maybe. But I suppose that is a emotion too, isn't it? Kind of contemplating your surroundings. but I did a project at Watts Gallery, which is near Guildford, and there I was making work in a, it was kind of like a really nice space because it was kind of within the landscape. So I used quite a lot of mirrored vinyl, and that was reflecting the trees around. And I kind of thought that was an interesting way of bringing the nature into the work rather than it normally being in a city or kind of urban environment.
Because sometimes those mirrored ones, a friend of mine's got some of those.
Yeah.
It's mirrored from one side, but not the other. So if that's the same with the coloured vinyls, then that's a different experience that the viewer's having either side of the window, isn't it?
Well, so the vinyl that I use is mirrored actually on both sides. It's just that one is like a little bit shinier. But the only thing is because it's it is kind of like a block of vinyl, that it has kind of tiny little holes in. So it is slightly porous and you can see through it a bit. Yes. But it is kind of different. And that one is probably like the only time where my work genuinely has a front and back. But I find because I layer it up with the transparent vinyl that it still kind of has that sense of being quite an interactive work as well. You still see the colours in relation to each other.
Excellent. I know you was part of the Kensington and Chelsea Art Week. Could you just tell us what you've done for the Kensington and Chelsea Art Week?
Yeah, definitely. So I've done two projects with them now. So I was invited to take part in the first one it was last summer in 2020. Yeah. So I was invited by Caroline Bosley, who's a curator, and she set up an installation for me on the King's Road. So it was a piece that was in an empty shop unit with just large vinyl shapes kind of forming crosses. And then from that, I was invited to a second project with them, which is called, it was like Chelsea Windows, basically. And the idea is that it's in empty shop units on various high streets around West London. Yeah, so for this one, I've created a piece called Art Deco Paradise, which is on High Street Kensington, just next to Robert Dias. And that one I installed just at the end of the lockdown in November, and it's kind of been up for a couple of months now, but hopefully it'll be a bit longer. So when the instruction to stay local is, you know, in action, then hopefully more people will be able to go and see it.
Oh, it's pretty cool though, isn't it? To have your work just on show on the whole of a shop front is quite a thing, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I kind of like it because when I was at one point, you know, doing more in the way of painting and things like that, I could never decide what size canvas I wanted to work on. So actually just having a window where it's like, this is the size of the canvas, make something fit it, is a lot easier for me to deal with.
It gets overlooked somewhat because people might just walk past it thinking that it's just part of the shop frontage.
Yeah, I mean, I quite like there's sort of like this kind of push and pull between kind of high street advertising on windows and then what constitutes an artwork, because a lot of the stuff you see kind of like on billboards and kind of hoardings and things like that, they're still made by, you know, creatives and designers. So they're really quite interesting. But I kind of like the idea that maybe my art is a kind of a reward for people who actually, you know, observe as well. And
yeah, that's what I was just about to say. People have that sense of discovery, don't they?
Yeah.
I've done it myself. You know, I've walked past a shop that is showing artwork and not even realised. And I've looked and I've gone, oh, and it is a nice little surprise for the viewer.
Yeah, definitely. And it's you know, these things kind of like they fit into the fabric, but the point is it's more about improving the environment. So even if people walk past and they don't think, yes, that's an artwork, it's better than them walking past something that's, you know, like this vacant unit that's got, I mean, because before it had kind of like, you know, massive like for leasing sign on it, and it just was quite sad looking. And I think particularly with, you know, High Street Kensington, that when I went there during the lockdown, it was quite weird because, you know, everywhere was closed and there's lots of empty units, and even like the, you know, the cafes that had to like remove all the seats and things so you could literally walk in and get a coffee and go. Yeah, nice. So it's nice to do something that really kind of like is improving the quality of the environment around there.
When Daylights, it takes on a new language itself, doesn't it? Do you ever install lighting on the inside to project it out? So it's like a 24-hour artwork.
We did that for the one on King's Road. So we had, we turned all the lights on in the unit, and that was actually really effective because what I did is I put frosted vinyl on the inside of the windows to then create this kind of like white palette. So during the day, it was a bit more subtle in terms of reflecting the light. And then yeah, at nighttime with the frosted vinyl, it really kind of like these white kind of blocks appeared behind the vinyl, and it really elevated. It looked amazing. So I'd like to do more of that. I definitely like to collaborate with lighting designers at some point if possible too.
Brilliant. Well, can I just touch on the ITV Creates?
Yeah, of course.
How did you find that experience? Because that's a medium that most artists really sort of work with, is it? Having it shown primetime TV to people who very possibly have very little or no interest in art.
Yeah, that was a really nice one to do because for all the people, you know, who know me but aren't necessarily in the arts, would, you know, it was for them, it was the real kind of like signposting that, you know, like I'd made it. You know, it's sort of funny because I've had other things in my career that I've been really proud of that happened prior to that. But that's probably the first one where people, you know, contacted me and say, no, we just saw you on TV. And I think, you know, for my family as well, it's a really nice thing. My mum and dad both like recorded it and sent me like videos and things like that. But it was really funny. But I mean, what was really great about it was I worked with a film crew, so they actually took the time to understand my work and play around with different lighting. And the piece I did was quite subtle in the sense that I had a glass panel, which they then built a false wall to give it a sort of a window to fit within. But I used frosted vinyl for the ITV logo. So when you looked at the window at certain angles, you couldn't see the frosted vinyl. But then when you shone a light behind it, it then cast the vinyl onto the floor. But where the frosted vinyl was, that the light wouldn't pass through it, so it left a shadow. And it was quite tricky to film it because of the distance between the window and then the floor and getting the right intensity. But I was just like, afterwards I said to Kevin, who's the director, I was like, oh, you know, I need you to come and film every artwork I do because it just looks so amazing. Yeah, exactly.
Did you get response from the public?
I mean, I did a bit. It's funny because there was someone has a YouTube channel where they dedicated to recording all of them and putting them on YouTube. So that was really nice. And then, I mean, there was someone who reviewed every ident and said which ones they preferred. So I don't know if mine was one of their favourites or not, but it's sort of a funny thing to sort of like be critiqued in that way. But yeah, I had some nice feedback, but it was mainly, you know, people who knew me, because although they sort of put your name on it. Yeah. I think it's another thing where it's sort of like it slides into your subconscious, and the TV companies are pretty good about doing interesting idents all through the years. Definitely. So, yeah.
I mean, I just wondered whether like social media followers bumped up a little bit, or there was any other interest from any other areas. Because I know I've known a couple of artists who have been, I know it's a little bit different, but I know they've been like a feature in a documentary or even a little something on the news, and they've had a spike of interest in their social media, because it is quite subtle, the ITV Creates. Although millions of people see it, it's a bit more subtle than like a 3-minute news link or a 15 minute documentary, isn't it?
Yes, it's hard to know with these things because a lot of it's so kind of organic, and all of these things are sort of signposting to people that you're serious, and you know, it's a great one to have on the CV. I find whenever I do something, it leads to something else. And when I get invited to do new opportunities, I always say to people like, oh, how did you come across my work? Yeah. But I haven't had someone directly say it was because of that. But I'm sure that it has influenced these things. And anytime you have exciting content for social media, it just tends to give it a little bit of a bump. Well, I think, you know, kind of like actually filming and you making the work and talking about it is a lot of an easier way to sort of unpack it. So. Yeah. Again, when I did my most recent commission for Nishura East, they made a film about me using the Haru tape, and we kind of put it on Instagram recently. And I've got, you know, quite a big group of people who watched it. And then, you know, people came to me afterwards and said, oh, we didn't realise like that's how you made the work. And for me, because I'm there kind of, you know, taping away slowly, cutting things out, and it's quite labour intensive, then you just sort of, you think, oh, well, this is frustrating, but enjoyable at the same time. So you don't always appreciate that other people can't maybe imagine what you do. So it's really helpful to have those kinds of films just to kind of really demonstrate the level of creativity that goes into it. And again, sort of showcasing the thought process. So
like with any artist, everyone just sees the finished article, don't they? And
yeah, definitely.
What do you do to relax, Fiona?
What do I do to relax? Well, it's sort of funny, isn't it? It's a bit like I do lots of things to relax, but I'm quite into films. So I watch a lot of films. I like going for walks and exercise and things like that. I mean, my life is very much involved in being an artist. A lot of my friends are creatives too. But I think, yeah, just kind of cooking nice food, watching a film, that's like the best thing you can do to chill out, particularly at the moment anyway. Yeah.
That's perfect at any time of the year, I think.
Yeah.
If there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Oh, that's a good one. So I suppose it would have to be some artists that influence my practice. So I'd love to show with Sol LeWitt. He's always been an artist that's been very influential in the way that I think about and understand my practice. So he would definitely be someone that I'd want to have in the show. And then Bridget Riley, because I love her work. I have been privileged enough to show with her once before, but I think it would be nice to see my work in the context of hers again. I really like the work of Rana Begum, so I'd put her in there as well. I think her sculptures are brilliant and she's a lovely person too. So five artists is that.
Three.
Maybe Daniel Buren as well. Okay. Another one who's very sort of, he's been making a lot of work with glass recently and he's been using kind of vinyls and there's a lot of interesting points again with what I'm doing. And then I think I'd have to include one of my friends as well. So I'd say artist Charlie Peters, because
yeah,
she's a really interesting artist and we have a lot of common sort of ways of seeing the world of making art and we kind of, you know, mentor each other. So I think you kind of have to bring your mates in up with you too, don't you?
Do you often have like more or less a crit or helpful mentors with other artists?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you always need feedback and it's helpful definitely, to talk through ideas. During lockdown, particularly the first one, me and a group of friends started Art Club, which was a weekly Zoom chat on Thursdays where we just kind of had a bit of a catch up and we decided to kind of continue that now. So we've kind of got themes for Art Club where we'll talk about different things. So a couple of weeks ago, it was artist statements. Which is kind of like just to sort of like encourage each other, but you know sometimes there's things where you like you know what you're doing with your work but it's just helpful to talk through somebody else with it and yeah. When you're even something like your artist statement, it's quite personal, so actually being able to talk to people you trust yeah. And if they give you a bit of harsh feedback you're not ready to hear, at least if it comes from your friends, then
exactly it's a bit easier to take, you know, it's a bit of honest constructive criticism rather than sort of stabbing you in the front, you know.
Yeah, definitely, and particularly now when we don't go to private views anymore and we're quite sort of isolated in some ways, it's just really important to keep catching up with people and talking through what you're thinking and doing so that you can all spur each other on as well.
Well, I got invited onto a group exhibition a few months ago and I went, what, a real exhibition? Like a real on walls exhibition.
Oh,
and
my.
And he said that like loads of artists had said the same thing. You know, what do you mean a physical one? You know,
because
we've got so used to, unfortunately, doing things that are just, you know, in the virtual world.
Absolutely. And,
it was quite funny to have that experience. If you wasn't an artist, what would you like to be?
That's a good question. Me and my friends sometimes joke, we're like, oh, you know, what would we do as a day job? And I still haven't been able to come up with a very good answer to that. I imagine I'd still do something within the creative sphere. I can imagine myself being a journalist or something because I really enjoy writing. And I mean, one of the things I love about art is just the opportunity to go to new places, meet new people, travel, all of those things. So I think that kind of inquiry is something that I've never really been able to, would not be able to let go of. So it'd have to be something that still felt that satisfaction.
And have you got anything coming up at the moment, Fiona? I know it's a bit hard in the environment we're in.
Yeah, I've got a couple of commissions that are underway, which I don't know if I'm allowed to say, so I'll just say that there will be some window installations coming to you very soon. One thing that is confirmed and has been started to be promoted is I'm taking part in an exhibition at the Art Station in Saxmundham, which is organised by an artist, Anne-Marie James, and the exhibition's called The Waiting Place. So she approached loads of artists and invited them to send an artwork to her, which is basically postcard size. So during like the past couple of lockdowns, she's just been accumulating all this work, Brilliant. Which is now framed. And I've actually been invited to do a little window installation for them too. So nice.
Not postcard size though, right?
No, so I'm doing the postcard and then the window installation. So I'm getting like a double bill in the show.
Is it the same design on both?
So it's been inspired by it. So I'm going to use the same colour palette. Yeah, but the artwork on the postcards are watercolour. So the window installation, I can't really recreate that effect without sort of scanning and printing it. So I wanted to do something a little bit different.
Watercolour is the ideal medium for you, isn't it? With its translucent qualities.
Exactly. Yeah,
think of that until you said it.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really see, but at the moment I've got like some piece of paper set up behind me, so I'm going to be doing some watercolour painting after we finish chatting today. And then I've also got a couple of other shows which I'm organising. So there's Recreational Grounds, which is a group exhibition at Thameside Studio, which is co-curated by myself, artist Tim Ralston and Anna Latridou, where we have a project space where we've been organising group shows over the past couple of years. So it's a little bit of an opportunity to bring back a few different artists that we've collaborated with and then represent their work in a different space.
Their gallery down at Thameside?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a nice gallery there.
Yeah, it's a lovely space, isn't it? And it's good because the exhibition's going to start at the end of May, but because the gallery is really big, then it makes it a lot easier for social distancing. So we're hoping that it will be kind of like quite a open exhibition where people can actually come and see it. And I mean, you have to kind of make a point of going there, but I think it's a really good opportunity for all the artists who, you know, we've all been making work in our studios and homes at the moment. So to be able to have a space where we can just make something really big should be really, really fun. So
and it's a massive hub all around there, isn't it, on that whole site?
Yeah, there's 550 artist studios, I think, and then there's the print studio and sculpture workshop. So it's a great little community, really. Yeah. It's going to be really nice to do that.
Excellent. Where can people see your work online, be it website or social media?
So my website's just www.fionagrady.co.uk, and then I'm on Instagram and Twitter. It's just Fiona_Grady, and Grady's Grady. I'm a bit obsessed with Instagram, so I post most days, so you get it's always more updated on Instagram than anywhere else, so that's the place to be.
Brilliant.
I just wanted to say thanks for chatting to me today. I've really enjoyed listening to your podcast recently, and I think it's really nice just to have the podcast, so then you can actually kind of like feel like you're having these conversations, which we don't really get to have at the moment. So yes.
Well, we've all noticed during lockdown, the listenership has gone up a little. So, you know, maybe people are yearning the voice of another human.
Well, it's just nice not to listen to the news as well, isn't it?
Oh, so... man, you're not kidding. I'm sick and tired of that. Okay, Fiona, thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Fiona.
I'll speak to you later.
Yeah, bye-bye. Have a good day. Bye.
And there you have it, Fiona Grady. As she mentioned there, she's got a show coming up over the next few weeks over at Thameside Studios, which is over in Woolwich. And if you've never been there before, but are in the vicinity, like Fiona said, there's over 500 artists there, a great gallery space, an amazing print studio, a very good cafe, amazing views, and if you're very lucky, you may even get a glimpse of Brian, which is Ray Richardson's rather infamous English Bull Terrier. And as we also mentioned now, Fiona's part of the Kensington and Chelsea Art Week, which is starting pretty soon. And I've been speaking to Vistalia Chilton, its founder and organiser, and it's looking very likely that I'll be recording an episode with a few of the artists. So, that's it for this week. Like I say every week, on whichever platform you listen to this podcast, you should be able to leave a comment. If you could do that, that really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast. If you've got any queries, drop us a line on social media at ministryofarts.org. If you're enjoying these episodes, spread the word of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're not, well, fuck you. You won't be listening to this bit anyway. And those of you that are, thanks for listening. And until next week, ta-da.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.